Thank you, Lawrence, and hello, everyone. My name is Ian S., a very grateful, recovered alcoholic and drug addict. Special thanks to my friend Vinny for a really good lead-in. I really enjoy hearing you talk, Vinny, and all the experiences you describe I identify with them so easily. So I was seeing in the chat that we've got some people who are at this meeting for the first time. I think this is the first time I've been to this meeting, although some of your faces are familiar to me from elsewhere. And whenever I come to a meeting, I try to remember what the purpose of me talking at that meeting is at all, which is if I were a new person sitting in a meeting like this, when I say new, I mean a person who has not yet recovered from the seemingly hopeless state of alcoholism or drug addiction, and is hoping that here in this room, here in this meeting of Cocaine Anonymous, in this Zoom room, where they've been told to go or where they maybe get a sense that they should go, they will find some kind of solution to their problem. I was one of those people for years. I was one of those people for a lot of these meetings. And I want to talk tonight if that's you, I'm talking to you, right? And if that's not you, well, then congratulations. You've already recovered, which means you're not as selfish as you used to be. So it shouldn't bother you too much that I'm not making this all about you. So what I want to do when I'm talking to a new person, if there's one sitting here, is I want to talk to you enough about myself that'll allow you to get the sense that I might have had the same problem that you're having now, right? And maybe even help you understand a little bit more about the problem that you're facing. I want to talk then about a bunch of stuff that I did not solve that problem, even though there were a lot of people, including often me, who told me that it would. And the reason I want to share those with you is for two reasons. First, maybe I can spare you some wasted effort. But also, if you've also tried some of that stuff and it didn't solve your problem either, I want to share that with you because I don't want you to get the sense that means your problem can't be solved. I'll talk more about that in a minute. And then I want to talk about the most important part, which is what you can actually do to recover from alcoholism or drug addiction, right? I want to talk to you about what does that even mean? What does it feel like to be recovered, right? And what do you have to do to get it? How long does it take? Is it hard? All that stuff. And that's a lot to cover in 30 minutes, but let's see if I can do it. So a little bit about me, just a little bit. When I say I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, what do I mean by that? Because people use those words to mean all sorts of things, right? Here's what I mean. And you can ask yourself if these two things are true about you. The first and the easiest one for me to learn about myself, the one I learned about first, is that I do not drink and I do not get high like other people. And specifically, I experience what this book calls the phenomenon of craving, which is a fancy way of saying that when I get started, I really have a hard time stopping. I can't ever actually reliably stop, not anymore. Maybe a little bit when I was younger, but I drank and got high for so long that eventually it became completely impossible for me to reliably stop drinking and stop using once I got started on a given occasion. And it's hard for me to kind of say why that is, because I've always been like that. But basically, ever since I was a teenage boy, I liked the feeling of that mind-altered state that I got from alcohol, which I discovered first, and I learned that I really liked it when combined with powerful stimulants like cocaine. And once I started having that feeling, I did not want it to go away. So if I would start drinking, you know, at lunchtime, I'd want to keep going until I fell asleep that night. If I'd start drinking at night, I wouldn't want to go to bed because I'd want to stay up and continue feeling this way. See if any of that seems familiar to you. In other words, I never in my life, I don't think, have stopped drinking or using on a given occasion because I really wanted to stop, and I really wanted to sober up. It was always because, if I was able to at all, always because I thought I should, right? I never got that feeling that I get when, you know, when you drink a glass of water, right? And, you know, if it's a big glass of water, you're kind of not thirsty anymore, you don't want more. Or maybe if it's a really hot day or you just run a marathon or something, you want like 2 glasses of water or something, but eventually you're gonna drink enough water and you're gonna think that's enough. I don't want any more water. Yeah, I don't get that feeling when I start drinking wine or spirits or when I start snorting cocaine. I don't get that feeling like, yeah, that's enough. Let's put it away. We'll do that, you know, maybe a little more next weekend, but I've got work in the meantime. That's not me. That's not how it works for me. And for a long time, because I started, like I said, I started drinking when I was a teenage boy, I didn't know that that wasn't everybody, right? I thought the people around me were just a lot more responsible than me. But as it turns out, and I swear this is true, for most people in the world, when they have like a couple of drinks with dinner, they start to get a feeling like, okay, that's enough. I've had enough. I don't want more. And so they stop drinking after one or two or however many they have because that's actually what they want to do. Not me, brother. Not me. That is not how I drink and get high. And this is a little bit of a problem, right? Because what I discovered was, and tell me if you've ever done this. You ever make rules for yourself, right? Like if you have a problem with drinking like I did, I would make rules like no more than this number of drinks in a night or only on like the weekends or maybe I won't keep it in my house or only on special occasions or only after this time of day or never at the office. There's a page in the book, page 31 in More About Alcoholism where it lists a bunch of this stuff like agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job and you know, so on and so on. Drinking beer only, never drinking alone, never drinking in the morning. I made all sorts of rules. The problem was I could never stick to those rules because once I'd get going, I'd start to think, well, you know, it's my rule. I can change that rule if I want to. And because of our friend, the phenomenon of craving, I reliably did. So that never worked. Drinking in moderation and using in moderation. Tried the same thing there. Like, you know, I'll have like a gram every, you know, just once a weekend, right? Yeah, right. Okay, and what are we going to do for the rest of Friday night, right? Like, that's the problem for me. That's not how it works. So using this stuff in moderation, drinking in moderation was not an answer for me, and I did try for a long time. So eventually I decided, and it was not a happy decision, but I decided I can't drink and use safely because every time I get going, I can't tell when I'm going to stop. And that's not safe, right? That's just not safe and can't be made safe. So the only solution, right, therefore, is entire abstinence. I had to not drink and not get high anymore. And I tried that, right? And then I discovered the second thing about me that's different than normal people. And this one took me a lot longer to fully internalize, to really get, which is I can't, at some point in my life, I don't know when it was, right? But it was a long time before I actually tried. At some point in my life, I lost the ability to choose whether I would take that first drink, right? Or that first drug or not. In other words, I literally do not have the power of choice when it comes to drugs and alcohol. Now, this is confusing because it feels like I do, right? I'd emerge out of a spree and think to myself, this has to be stopped. This isn't safe. I cannot take so much as one drink. I'm never texting that guy to bring cocaine to my house ever again in my life. And I would mean it. I would mean it. And then a few days would go by. I'd have a couple good nights sleep or maybe one good night's sleep and a couple of sandwiches and have a full tummy. And I'd start to think to myself, I don't know. Maybe I wasn't making too much of a small matter. I'll be fine this time. This time will be different. And I do that over and over and over and over. And every time, it would feel like, yeah, I'm just changing my mind. I'm making bad decisions, but I am making decisions, right? Bang! Wrong. No, I wasn't. It only felt like I was making decisions. And I didn't really get what was going on with me until one day it finally happened, which is I absolutely, really, truly didn't want to drink and get high. And I just found myself doing it anyway. And there it didn't feel like it was changing my mind. And I realized, oh, I've never been changing my mind. I lost the power to choose this a long time ago. So that's my basic problem. Can't drink safely, can't stop drinking. Can't use safely, can't stop using. You know, in those conditions, I'm on a fast track to the gates of insanity or death, right? And indeed I was. And so I realized this, and I realized that this was a problem. And then I tried a bunch of stuff. So just pause there. That's kind of like chunk number one. If that stuff sounds like you, and especially, if that second part sounds like you, if you've had a lot of failed attempts in your life to stop doing things like using drugs or drinking alcohol or whatever that you know are killing you, but those attempts, you can never seem to like sustain them, right? You can never stay stopped. And you've maybe thought to yourself, like I thought to myself, it's because I'm not taking this seriously enough. It's because I'm not trying hard enough. And if I really cared about my family, my job, myself, whatever, my son, I have a beautiful 4-year-old son. If I really loved him, then I'd try harder, right? If you've ever thought that, just stay tuned here, because that kind of constant failure, which doesn't manifest in any other area of my life, right? There's no other area of my life where I can't make a decision and stick to it like I can't make a decision and stick to it with this, right? If that sounds like you, you may actually be suffering from an illness that only a spiritual experience will conquer. So now let me tell you about some stuff that I tried to conquer this illness that absolutely positively did not work at all. And I want to emphasize, when I say it didn't work at all, I mean it didn't work at all. This stuff didn't help even 1%. In fact, at the end of years of trying all the things I'm going to describe, I was worse. Because alcoholism and drug addiction are progressive illnesses. And so while I was doing a bunch of stuff that didn't get me better, I was getting worse the whole time. So first one, easiest one is, you know, just trying harder. Willpower, right? Absolutely does nothing for a person of my description. And if you're like me, won't do anything for you. I'd wake up out of these sprees. I'd resolve to try harder next time. And next time, I would try as hard as I could. And I'd still end up drunk or high. Bam, didn't work. Okay. That was pretty easy to figure out. I was like, I need something more than just trying on my own power. How about, I bet this one might sound good. What if I go to a lot of AA or CA or 12-step meetings, right? What if I go to a meeting every damn day, right? What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to meetings and not drink between meetings. Bam, didn't work. Just didn't work, right? I did that every day for like 6 weeks at one point when I was in rehab. More about that in a minute. And you know what I did at the end of those 6 weeks? I stopped at a liquor store on the way home because I was dying. I was dying of untreated alcoholism. I was going crazy. I couldn't live like that in that dry, that powder dry, unrecovered, restless, irritable, discontented state. Going to a lot of meetings did not and would never have relieved my alcoholism and addiction. Now, it's not to say there's nothing valuable at these meetings. Obviously, I'm at one and you're at one. But what I finally got at a meeting that was valuable is I met somebody who showed me a way out, right? That's what meetings are good for. They're useful for connecting the person who has found the way out to the person who hasn't yet. But I didn't get that. I didn't understand that. I thought that basically if I went to a meeting, that's how I would get my daily reprieve somehow. And it just did not work like that for me. So don't ever let anybody tell you, right, that meeting makers make it. Or rather, people can say what they want. We're not here to run people's lives. If you've ever been a meeting maker who didn't make it and you think that means you're too sick to get better, it doesn't mean that. What that means is you have untreated alcoholism or drug addiction. And people who can stay sober on meetings are different than you, right? And that's wonderful for them. But for people like us, for you and me, for whom going to a meeting all the time is not going to make them, like, get well, don't worry. There's a real answer for us too, right? And it doesn't involve going to a meeting every single day. You can go to meetings every day if you want to. I go to meetings almost every day, but that's not what keeps me well. Okay. Another thing that didn't help is I went into inpatient, like, treatment centers twice. I went to rehab. I stayed sober. I will admit, I did stay sober while I was there for 6 weeks the first time and for about 4 weeks, for 30 days the second time. So I guess in that sense, it's all my problem for those 6 weeks and that month. Although the price was like, you know, like not zero. I don't know how it works in other countries, but in America, these things cost like a lot of money. But then I got out, and the first time, as I said, I stopped at a liquor store on the way home, right? That's how little actual recovery I experienced. And truthfully, I couldn't wait to stop at that liquor store on the way home because I really thought like this time will be different. I'm going to drink like a gentleman. Didn't work that way. The second time I went, this was years later, right? I was much worse. I really, really wanted to get better this second time. And I like applied myself in that second rehab like I was trying to get an A in recovery, like get an A in my rehab report card, right? And I really tried my hardest. I like did everything that was suggested. I did all the stuff. And I was sober for about 2 weeks on the outside the second time, right? And that was pretty demoralizing, pretty terrifying, because here I'd been, I mean, if you're going to rehab for a second time at all, already that suggests you might be kind of a hard case. But if you can't even get 30 days on the outside of the walls of a rehab, sober, on your own power, when you're really trying, that's scary. And it did scare me. It scared the hell out of me, right, to have that happen to me. And so if you have ever been to a treatment center, if you've ever been to, in America, we call these IOPs sometimes, intensive outpatient programs, which are like, you go somewhere, you still live at your house, but you go somewhere every day for like, you know, some programming, some like therapy sessions or, you know, courses or I don't know, whatever. If you've ever been to those or a rehab or, you know, you've been to a detox in a hospital after giving yourself a real scare, which I've also done, and you still drank or used afterwards, don't worry. That doesn't mean you can't get better. There's a real solution for people like you and me. It just doesn't, it's not that, right? For the true alcoholic or addict that is described in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, going to treatment centers, going to meetings, getting more physical exercise, therapy. I tried therapy. I went to see a therapist who specialized in the treatment of drug addicts. And eventually, she had to fire me because I wasn't getting any better. After like, I don't know, 6 months or a year, I just was not improving at all. And she could tell me, and she could tell, right? How demoralizing is that? I'm going to see a person who is a specialist in this. She's like, sorry, you're hopeless, right? I felt like that guy the Big Book talks about who was like basically told by Carl Jung, the famous psychiatrist in Europe, yep, sorry, you're going to die of this. I don't know. I can't help you, buddy. And that was pretty scary. Another thing that didn't help me get better, by the way, is a series of increasingly scary and demoralizing experiences. In other words, if you've ever tried to stay sober on fear, but that hasn't worked, don't worry, there's a solution that will work for you, because fear didn't sober me up either. Oh, sure, it would sometimes sober me for a day or two if I'd get into something particularly terrifying. And I did, of course, because if you can't control how much you're drinking and using and you're using powerful mind-altering substances, you're going to start to have some really scary and dangerous stuff happen to you, some really demoralizing stuff happen to you. Right? Like, I've had the police in my house while I was, like, naked, standing in a pool of my own blood, and they were there to arrest me, not help. That sobered me for a few days, right? But it wasn't a real solution, right? So if you've ever had these kind of scary experiences and still drank and used again, I got news for you. That means that you're probably the alcoholic and addict described in this book and can't stay sober on fear. But that doesn't mean you can't stay sober at all. And so on and so on and so on and so on. One last one. Is I also tried, and here's the thing that also didn't work for kind of a subtle reason, is I tried having a sponsor who took me through the steps of this book. Actually, I tried that several times. And the reason that this did not work for me is something I'm going to get to in a little bit. But basically, these guys were taking me through the solution, all right. They sure were. And they were giving me the good solution. They were giving it to me, you know, straight up, uncut, right? But they were doing it slowly. Right? Because that's how they'd gotten sober. And they perhaps were not as bad off as me when they recovered. And so they were able to get sober more slowly, meaning like once a week, going over, you know, reading together out of the book for an hour, doing instructions when we'd get to it, stuff like that. And then we'd meet again the next week. But that would have taken like months to get through even like the you know, get to the, you know, fourth step moral inventory, right? And by that time, I just couldn't hold out that long on my own power. So I'd be drinking and using again. So again, that same page in More About Alcoholism, page 31, which talks about the methods we've tried. You know, it talks about others. Reading inspirational books. You ever read like a self-help book and like decided you're going to, you know, change your life on the basis of it and you still drank and used? Yeah, that's because that doesn't work for people like you and me. You know, getting more physical exercise. This is a very popular one in certain like segments, like subcultures in America, like hitting them. Just going to the gym every damn day, man. I'm like taking care of myself. I'm like watching, you know, YouTube videos about fitness. Yeah, that's fine for a little while, but it's not going to keep you permanently sober if you're the kind of person like me, right? And it talks about health farms and sanitariums. That's what they used to call rehab. You know, all this stuff, taking a trip and not taking a trip. You ever skipped a trip because you were afraid that if you went on the trip, you'd be, oh, I'm going to be around drinking, I'm going to be around drugs, and then you just ended up drunk at your own house? That happened to me. You ever gone on the trip to get away from the place? I gotta get a change of scenery, man. I need to move to a whole new place. And then you get there and you're still you, which means that you're still an untreated alcoholic or drug addict when you get off the plane. That happened to me too. Taking a trip, not taking a trip, those don't work. Those aren't solutions for the real alcoholic and drug addict that is described in this book, and which I am definitely one. So that should, I mean, I could go on and on and on about all the ideas that I tried and failed over those period of many years when, after I had lost the first job I would lose because I was drunk at a work event, not the last, but it was the first, and went to rehab the first time, all the way through years later, when I went to rehab the second time after having to go to the hospital for a pretty bad case of the DTs and alcoholic necropathy, like my nerve endings and my fingers and stuff were dying, I was much worse off. I tried this stuff for years, and you know what that got me? I never, in that period of, I think that was like 4 years of trying, did not get to 60 days sober one time. True story. And I'm counting. I was in rehab for 6 weeks once. So even spotting me 6 weeks one time and 4 weeks another time, I still couldn't get to 60 days sober. Not once. Yikes, right? You might look at a guy like that, and then you might be a guy or gal like that and think, hopeless case, right? Can't get better. Put him on AA or CA hospice. And, I guess he just wasn't willing, or maybe he's just one of those people who can't be honest with themselves. Who knows? And then, so if you've ever thought that about yourself, again, don't worry. There's a solution. So now I'm going to tell you the thing that actually did solve my problem. But first, let me tell you what it means when I say that problem has been solved. Obviously, I've been, continuously sober now for, more than a year. And that, blows my mind that that's true. But it is true. But the more important thing is the way that sobriety happens in my life. Let me tell you some things that might be a little bit surprising, although maybe not if you're a recovered person yourself. There is alcohol in my house right now. There's a bottle of vodka downstairs in my freezer. The reason for that is that my girlfriend is a normal temperate drinker, and so we keep alcohol in the house because she likes to mix it and have it with dinner sometimes, stuff like that. She's a normal temperate drinker, so that bottle of vodka lasts for weeks or months because she'll have one or two drinks and be like, that's good, I'm good until next weekend. Now, lots of people would tell you that a recovered alcoholic and drug addict like me should not have a bottle of alcohol sitting in his house, especially as, at the moment, I am unsupervised. She's in Croatia with her family on vacation. And so I've been alone in my house with just me and occasionally my son for the last 2 weeks, but it has not presented any temptation to me. I really want to emphasize that. When I wake up in the morning, the desire to drink isn't there. It's gone, right? I never deleted the number of the traveling cocaine salesman who visited my house so many times. It's still on my phone. I could text him right now. And, I would have an 8-ball of pretty high quality cocaine at my house in no time. I have no interest in it. The reason I haven't bothered to delete his number is because I don't think about it. The only time I ever think about any of this stuff, the bottle in the freezer, the number on my phone, is when I'm telling stories like this at meetings like this. I'm trying to convey to you, in other words, that I'm not describing a life that's always beset by temptation and struggle and thinking, okay, I just got to make it through today, or maybe I just got to make it through this hour, and just scraping out one miserable moment at a time after the next, denying myself something that I really wish I could have. That's the key, right? Because if you're let's say you're in your 30s, like I was when I recovered, and I might hope to live another 50, 60 years, who knows, but certainly a good number of years. The idea of spending every number of, every day throughout those years denying myself something that I really wanted because I knew it wasn't good for me sounded horrible. And it would have been horrible, but that's not what recovery feels like. What it feels like, and this is, I want to read just a little bit from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, from pages 84 and 85. This is the paragraph that are often called the 10th step promises. Sometimes in meetings you will hear, quote, the promises referred to, but in fact this book makes lots of promises about the outputs of its program of action, and the promises, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through stuff, that's attached to the 9th step, and those are good, but this is about the 10th step, right? So after we've taken the whole program of action and we're into the maintenance steps of 10, 11, and 12, more about that in a second, how are we going to feel? Okay, this is how we feel. It says, this is the carryover paragraph from 84 to 85. It says, well, we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol or drugs or other mind-altering substances, because by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. When I read that, I thought, how can that possibly be true? I've been interested in liquor since I was a teenage boy and discovered it. But I'm telling you, folks, it's gone. I don't want it. That's why I don't drink it, right? I haven't sworn off. if I'm tempted by it, if I have the thought, like you ever have an intrusive thought when you're driving, like, what if I just drove off the road? We recoil from it as from a hot flame, right? I'm like, whoa, no, absolutely not. And that's a sane and normal reaction for me because I don't drink safely. I don't use safely. So if I have that thought, I instantly recoil from it because it's dangerous. That's a sane and normal reaction, and it's an automatic reaction. I don't have to think myself into that, right? And this new attitude toward liquor and drugs was given to me without any thought or effort on my part. It just came. So I'm not fighting it. I'm not avoiding temptation. I feel like I'm in a position as to alcohol and drugs of neutrality, right? I can take it or leave it. And because I know I can't do it safely, I leave it. It's that simple, right? It really is that simple. It says we haven't even sworn off. I have not sworn off. I've not said I'm not going to ever drink or get high again. The problem instead has been removed from me. And earlier in the book, it says that the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body, right? My body still reacts to drugs and alcohol in an abnormal way. That's still true. But if I don't take that first drink, right, if the problem in my mind is removed so I can stay sober in a sane and normal way, then the problem just doesn't exist for me, right? So I don't have to be cocky, don't have to be afraid. That's my experience. That's what the book authors say their experience was. That's my experience too. As long as I keep in fit spiritual condition, okay? So that's what it feels like to be recovered, right? And if you don't feel like that, let me promise you, it is possible to feel like that. And I, as I've hoped my little story at the beginning has conveyed to you, I was about as hopeless a case as they come, right? Like, I really, really thought that drugs and alcohol were my solution to all the problems and hurts and pains of my life. And they had been my reliable solution, my sort of Colt 45, sorry for the American gun analogy, my whole entire life, right? I never thought I could be a person that's described in this paragraph, but I did become this person. And the way I became this person was like amazingly surprising to me. First, it happened fast. The man that took me through this work, my beloved sponsor, his name's Cameron F. He's a CA guy too, took me through this program of action in 10 days. That's pretty fast, right? And you'll hear from a lot of people sometimes in the fellowship that you should, like, you know, take it easy. First things first. Try to do about a step a month. Yeah, that's fine. You say whatever you want. That wouldn't have worked for me, right? Because going slow was killing me. He took me through the program of action very, very quickly. We met every day for about 10 days, and he took me through 1 to 12 in that period to get me to the point where I could start working with others. That was Cameron's kind of key insight, and it was the insight that the AA guys in the 40s had too, that the thing that's best for a new person, the thing that will most ensure their immunity from drinking and that will put them in a state where they're feeling like this is when they get down to the business of helping other people, right? Helping other people is the foundation stone of your recovery, right? Because then you're not thinking about yourself. Then you're out of your own head and you are concentrating on how can I be of greatest service to the people around me and to God. So he took me through quickly. That was important. Second, he took me through what we did was the program of action described in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. The whole program and nothing but the program. There can be so many conflicting and confusing and like so many suggestions that you hear in the rooms and meetings that it can be a little confusing to know what you're supposed to do, right? Like sometimes I heard like you got to call your sponsor every day, or you've got to call like five alcoholics every day, or you got to attend at least one meeting a day, or you've got to like write a gratitude list every day. And if those things are benefiting you, I think that's wonderful, but they are not in this book, and I did not do those things. For those 10 days, I attended a total of, I think, zero meetings, right? Because there was no time for that. I was too busy doing the work to get better. He said, there'll be time for meetings. You'll be going to a lot of meetings because you're going to be looking for new people to work with. But right now, just attending meetings, like, why don't you write your fourth step instead? So I did. Why don't you, you know, start making amends to the people you've harmed? So I did, right? What use is it to be sitting in a meeting if you haven't taken a moral inventory of your grosser defects, you can start asking God to remove them. Why are you sitting in a meeting, right? Go get a pen and a piece of paper and draw some columns, right? If you're sitting in a meeting thinking about yourself and your problems instead of going out and helping others or going out and repairing the damage that you've done, right? I hurt people, a lot of people, when I was drinking and getting high for as long as I did, okay? 21 years of my life I spent that way. There was some serious damage done to a lot of people in my life. You think that they wanted me to go work on me, like sitting in a meeting, talking about my problems and how, like, you know, the cashier at the grocery store pissed me off that day? No, right? They wanted to see me set things right. And so that's what I think that it's very important to be doing. And then, you know, the other thing is he instilled in me a very important idea, which is that this program of action is not designed to make a person dependent upon their sponsor. There is so much codependency in the fellowship and in the rooms of AA and CA. I hear wild, absolutely wild stories from people who are like, yeah, my sponsor said I couldn't date this person, even though it says in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that God alone can judge our sex situation. I hear people informing me that their sponsor has told them who they can and can't date. I hear people, so I've heard this one a lot lately, I've heard people say that they are managing the medications of their sponsees. Well, I decide, you know, psychoactive medication is a mind-altering substance, and you can't be doing that, even though the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that we never belittle the services of a good psychiatrist. And there are AA and CA pamphlets that make it brutally fucking clear, excuse my language, that we are not to be telling our sponsees to go off their meds. I hear that all the time. We didn't do any of that stuff. What we did is the thing that allowed the low-bottom alcoholics in the 1930s and 40s, like Bill W. and Dr. Bob, to get better. We did it quickly, like they did. And I got better just like they did. And then I commenced to start trying to take this message to other people. So, all that to say, and I see that I'm just about out of my time, so this is a good time to sort of wrap up. All this to say, if you are the person that I've been describing, if you're like me, if you heard my failed strategies to stop and you thought I did that stuff too and it didn't work, or if you heard my description of how I drink and get high and thought, yeah, that's me, and if you too would like to have a spiritual experience that allows you to not be interested in the things that are killing you and to go and be useful to other people, I would love to show you how this program works. It can be learned very quickly. It only takes a few days to learn how it works. It takes a lifetime to practice it, and I'd love to get you into the point where you are out there being of maximum service to other people. In other words, there really is a solution. It really does work for people as bad as I was. And if you're as bad as I was and you'd like that solution, I would love to tell you about it. My name is in the chat, and I'll stop there. Thanks very much for letting me share.